listening to the Anti-Failure Podcast. My mission is to share the stories of small business owners, managers and entrepreneurs who have embraced failure to help them on their path to success. I'm your host, Chris Kendall, and joining me in the booth is Richard Owens. Richard founded his business With Wine back in 2013 with a simple mission to help people buy directly from wineries more easily. With Wine is now a fully integrated customer engagement and e-commerce platform for wineries, both in Australia and abroad. Thanks for joining me today, Rich. Let's get started with just a bit of background and your story to this point.
How far back do you want to go?
As far as you'd like to take us.
Okay, so I finished up in school and I wasn't in a rush to go straight to uni.
Yeah.
Just finished up school that I didn't see the point of 3 months later jumping straight back into school again. So I didn't leave school with a plan, but it kind of got to a point where I had to do something, and I made a decision that if I didn't get a job before uni enrollments closed, I'd go to uni. But if I did get a job, then I'd do that. So anyway, there was an ad in the paper, the physical newspaper, for office juniors at Macquarie Bank. I applied. I went for a whole bunch of interviews, and then ultimately they're like, right, well, what job do you want? Do you want this or this or this? And I was like, honestly, I don't know.
Want a job?
I want a job. And anyway, they said, well, look, if you want to learn how a bank works and get to know some people and get a feel for your way around the place, one of the office juniors' jobs is a mailboy. And I just went, sounds good, I'll take that. And actually, I think that was one of the best decisions I could have made back then, because it really did give me exposure to the entire bank. I didn't sort of get to see how just one little section of it worked. I got to work in or see multiple divisions, meet lots of people, have lots of conversations. I was delivering mail to the CEO and the chairman. But then that led into my next job. So I did that for a year full time, and I did end up going to uni. But one of the guys in margin lending said, what are you going to do? And I said, I'm going to uni. And they said, are you going part-time, full-time? And they offered me a part-time role in margin lending while I was at uni. So I did that on and off for, 3 years. After uni, I took some time off, drove around Australia while I was trying to find myself.
And did you find yourself?
It certainly helped.
Yeah?
The trip certainly helped. I still think the trip is one of my greatest accomplishments.
Fantastic.
And anyway, kept working at Macquarie Bank for a while, then moved to London, worked at Rothschild Bank. I was working in Treasury, and that actually ended up being really interesting. Basically, if you want to learn how the world works, work in a Treasury department. And even better, work in a Treasury department in London on the money market desk when the GFC is happening.
Right.
So that was fascinating. But because of the GFC, my contract didn't get renewed. So I went traveling for a year and literally backpack on my back and looking at the board at the airport, trying to work out where I'm going to go that day.
Fantastic.
Did a ski season in Whistler, did a summer season in the Greek islands. And then eventually I couldn't go back to the UK because my highly skilled migrant visa had expired.
Right.
I couldn't go to the US because they weren't hiring non-citizens.
Yeah.
And eventually I kind of had to come home, much to my dissatisfaction. So came home, faffed about for a while, took a job that I didn't like. I was trying to break out of banking. I never intended to get into banking and stay in banking. I actually wanted to get into marketing and or tech, but every marketing agency I applied for, they just looked at my resume and said, you're a banker, you're not a marketer. Or they'd offer me a job making coffees or something and paying no money.
Yep.
So I never actually ended up going down that marketing path. But the years after coming back from London were pretty tough.
Yep.
I was turning 30 and I was still single and I was still trying to work out what I wanted to do.
Yep.
I worked at Apple for a year. Again, my attempt to try and break out of finance and get into tech and just a foot in the door. But what I wanted to do at Apple was a function that only happened out of the US.
Mm-hmm.
And it was pretty clear that that wasn't going to happen anytime soon. So I finished up there. I actually ended up going back to Macquarie Bank again,
right?
Where I took a role running innovation, and that was actually pretty cool. But then that role was made redundant.
Wow.
But then the innovation guy was made redundant, which was kind of funny at the time. And so now this is 2013, and one of my exec sponsors at the bank, we were having a beer together,
mm-hmm.
and he said, "How's the job market?" And I said, innovation managers in finance, not in huge demand right now. And he said, what about this wine thing you keep banging on about? How about you give that a go? And I said, oh, yeah, I think it's an all right idea. And he said, well, have you got a wife, a kid, or a mortgage? And I said, no. And he said, for God's sake, do it now. Or you'll never end up doing it. So I said, well, what do you think? And he said, write a deck and I'll consider investing in it. And I was like, oh, shit.
Things get real at that point.
Yeah, yeah. And he did. So that's a short summary.
Very interesting. For me, I've been through that process, leaving school, not going to university, then finding a passion, then going to university. What was it about banking? Very lucrative. You've got opportunity to earn a lot of money. But there was something in you that was still being called out to do something non-banking. Can you put words on what that was?
Well, I didn't grow up wanting to be a banker. You know that Seinfeld episode?
Yeah.
I mean, look, it was interesting.
Mm-hmm.
But for me, I wasn't able to be creative or inventive, or at least I wasn't at the level where if you are creative or if you are inventive, there's not much you can do about it.
Mm-hmm. So the move into the wine product, do we call it a product or the platform, that was driven by an interest in wine?
Well, actually, no. So go back. So rewind to just coming back from London. I had some money left over from London. And anyway, around this time, 2007, the iPhone came out. 2008, the App Store came out. And I wanted to develop an app. And so I started with one little app. It cost me $500 to make. But then I got thousands of downloads. I was just selling it for a dollar each. And I got probably 10,000 downloads or 15,000 downloads. So spend $500, get 15,000 back. And I kind of just was really fascinated, or really, I don't know, it sort of, I got a bug, like it sort of captured me.
Yeah.
The fact that I was able to create something and have an idea, execute the idea, do so for $500, and then it turns out 15,000 odd people found that idea valuable to them all around the world. Mm-hmm. So I did one, then I did another, then I did another. I did five apps all up. Now, I didn't code them.
Yeah, sure.
I just came up with the idea and then found people to code them up.
Yep.
That sort of gave me the bug. So it was a creative outlet. It was tech. It made me feel like I was doing something for other people. I was solving a problem. And I was always solving little problems that I had. And it just turned out that a lot of people
had the same problem.
So they were little apps solving little problems for relatively little groups of people. And I'd always dream about having an idea for a big app that would solve a big problem for a big group of people. I just had no idea what it would do or what it was until I was invited to a farmhouse one evening for a weekend by one of my dad's mates, or by my dad.
Mm-hmm.
So I rocked up on the Friday afternoon, and it turns out, so Dad's mate is a wine fanatic, a hardcore wine collector. He finds a wine he likes, he buys it by the pallet. Anyway, we're all sitting around the kitchen table, and some people are having some white wine and whatnot. I'm just having a beer because I just used to drink beer. Anyway, Dad's mate, his name is David, started saying, oh, you know, wait until we start having the wine for dinner. It's a special wine. It's a $700 bottle of wine. And I just wasn't paying attention. I was like, I've got my beer.
Yeah.
I'm happy.
I'm good. Yeah.
And so we all sat down for dinner. And then he started going around and pouring everyone some wine. And he poured some into my glass. And I went, oh, shit, no, don't. Don't.
Be wasted.
Don't waste it on me.
Mm.
And he just looked at me and just went, why not? I went, I don't like wine. And he just went, well, that's because you drink shit wine. And he just poured me a glass. And I was like, oh, God. Well, I'm staying in his house, so I don't want to insult him. So I better just muscle my way through it. And the thing, I thought, I've got to muscle my way through it, but I knew I'd also have to muscle through the hangover the next day, because red wine always gave me this back of the head, can't operate hangover. So anyway, I kind of took a sip and I was like, oh, yeah, I think I can actually manage. That's different from
what I've drunk.
The house red at Cargo Bar. So I finished the glass. I was like, right, job done.
Yeah.
I drank your glass of wine. And then he just instantly poured me another glass. And I kind of remember going, oh, well,
I'm here now.
I'm here now.
Yep.
I'm in a farmhouse. The fire's going. So he poured the second glass and I said, but I'm going to get this hangover. And he went, no, you won't.
Yeah.
He said, no, you won't. Good wine doesn't give you hangovers. Long story short, I ended up having three or four glasses that night. Woke up the next morning, didn't have a hangover. And then David said, right, now that you're a wine drinker, let's go down to the cellar and get you some wine to take home.
Wow.
And so we went down and he got me good stuff. And he said, there you go. Now, when you get through that, let me know and I'll give you some more. And I said, mate, that'll take me years to get through. And he's like, no.
You're hooked now.
No, it won't. So he was the one who kind of kicked it all off.
And then that's being matched with a passion of a tech platform.
Well, not yet. Rewinding again to after London, I did a couple of apps, but I also tried to start a non-app business. I tried to start a website or a platform, and it was called Bibbidi, you know, Bibbidi Bobbidi Boo. And Bibbidi was where if I was looking for a mechanic, but I didn't have a good mechanic, I could type in, I'm looking for a mechanic, and it would say, your mate Chris uses this mechanic.
Okay.
Your other mate Mitch uses that mechanic. Yep. And so I wasn't getting referrals from the crowd, I was getting referrals from my friends.
People who you already know.
Yeah. Yep. So word of mouth is the cheapest and most powerful marketing there is, but it's very reactive.
Mm-hmm.
And I wanted to make word of mouth proactive,
mm-hmm.
where I didn't have to call you. Yep. Or I didn't have to wait until we're at a dinner party and go and just happen to mention my car.
Yep.
Needs a mechanic, blah, blah, blah. So that's what Bibbidi was. Actually, that's where I put the last dollars from London into Bibbidi, and it never publicly launched. It was just like a working prototype. But I always liked the idea. It didn't quite hit. While I was working at Apple, I met a guy who owned all the hairdressing salons in David Jones and Meyer. And so I thought, well, he would like this. So I said, hey, I've got this idea. Da, 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 da. And he said, I think it's a fabulous idea. And I said, well, do you want to invest in it? He said, no, not at all. Now, fast forward a year, and I lived on Bondi Road, yep. directly across the road from Kemeny's.
Okay.
Now, until that day, I had never, ever intentionally gone into a shop to spend money on a bottle of wine with the intention of consuming that bottle of wine myself.
Right.
Never. I think I'd only bought a bottle of wine once or twice to give to someone as a present. So it was the Wednesday afternoon after being on the farm. I walked into Kemeny's with money in my pocket to buy a bottle of wine. And I walked into Kemeny's and then just went, you know.
How do I make this?
And I just walked around. I just went, what the fuck? What do I do?
Yeah.
And anyway, I decided that I didn't have a bloody clue what to do.
Mm-hmm.
In the corner of my eye, I saw the beer fridge.
Yeah.
So low risk. I knew I'd done it 100 times before, so I went to the beer fridge. But just as I pivoted on my heels to go to the beer fridge, I just thought, I wish there was a way I could see the wines my friends like. You know, I wish there was a way I could see the wines that David likes. And then anyway, I thought, well, hang on a second, that's like my Bibbidi idea, but it's for wine.
Mm-hmm.
And so I couldn't kind of let go of that idea. So I ended up ringing up the hairdressing salon guy. And I said, hey, remember Bibbidi? He went, oh, yeah. I said, what about Bibbidi for wine? And he went, ooh. He goes, ooh, I do like that. And I said, would you put some money into that? And he said, yeah, I think I would. So, you know, I had the Macquarie Bank executive. I had him. Yeah. These people saying, we'd put money into it. So that's kind of how that started to play out. So then fast forward a little bit further, I'd had this idea for Bibbidi for wine. And then the redundancy happened at Macquarie. The guy said, what about that wine thing? You should give it a go. And I will say too, the redundancy was like it was a personal sort of traumatic thing to go through. Like being made redundant, awful.
Yeah.
It kind of feels like a very formal way of saying you are not valuable to this business anymore. So I took it super personally. I took it very personally. But one of the real driving forces for actually doing it was that it was so traumatic, it was so painful that I decided I never wanted to be made redundant again. And the only way to absolutely guarantee that was to never work for anyone else again and to start my own business.
And made a commitment to yourself that you would not put yourself in that same personal situation.
No matter how hard what I'm about to do, and it's way harder than I thought it would be, but no matter how hard I thought it was going to be, it couldn't be any worse than getting told that you're not valuable with a redundancy.
Yes, interesting. So going back to that moment, and we'll talk more about with wine in a minute, but what was it about you that helped you recover from that personal devastation?
Well, eventually after I got over the indignity of being made redundant, there was a couple of things. First of all, I do have quite a habit of saying, fuck it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, what's the worst that could happen?
Yeah.
Like when I left London, I sort of made a mental deal with myself that if ever anyone said, do you wanna, that I'd just say yes. So left London and then I was on a boat in Croatia. I met this guy for 5 minutes. Anyway, 3 months later, I'm in New York. And as you know, even if you've met him for 5 minutes, yeah, he's a Facebook friend.
Yep.
Anyway, he came up on the chat and somehow we just got talking. Where are you? And he said, oh, I'm in Australia, but I'm going over to Canada to do a ski season in Whistler. He's like, where are you? And I'm like, I'm in New York. I'm not sure what I'm doing next. And he just went, do you want to come and do a ski season with me? And I was like,
well, I know.
Well, I got to now. And so that's how I ended up doing a ski season in Whistler. When the ski season finished up, one of the guys said, oh, do you want to come to Greece with me? I'm like, I guess so.
Yeah.
So I do have a bit of that, like, yeah, you know, I was...
Throw caution and just...
Yeah, yeah. You never know where things are going to end up sort of thing. Going back to high school, do you remember the brand No Fear?
Yes.
The surf brand or skate brand?
Skate brand, yeah.
And they had these posters, No Fear posters.
Yeah.
Anyway, there was this poster that I had on my wall years ago, and it said, there's nothing more painful than regret. And so that poster gave me the confidence to talk to girls. It gave me the confidence to do all sorts of things. And when Matt said, do you have a wife, kid, mortgage? No. Now's the best time to do it. I kind of, there was a big element of going, well, if I don't do it, I'll regret it. So fuck it. I don't want to regret it. I don't want to be made redundant again. And by the way, I've done a few apps and I love it. But then the real big one was looking at my experience with wine and going, there's a real gap here in the customer experience. Now, when I started getting into wine, I was working at Apple.
Mm-hmm.
And Apple provides the best retail experience, the best buying experience, arguably like the best customer engagement experience. Like everything they do is on point. Mm-hmm. Now, Apple have a custom built system to power those customer experiences. Now, so I was the Apple man and I started going to wine and wineries and wine festivals and all that. David was like, you've got to go to a cellar door. I'm like, what's a cellar door? So I started going to cellar doors and I just started noticing over and over and over again how many times I wanted to give a winery my money, but they wouldn't or couldn't take it. I'd go to a cellar door, you have a tasting, you buy a bottle out of guilt.
Mm-hmm.
And then you're in the car an hour later driving back down to Sydney and you're always going, oh, shit, I probably should have got some from the first winery.
Mm-hmm.
What was it called? You know, what was the winery called? And I don't worry what the bottle was. What was the winery called?
Right.
Or I'd go to a festival. I remember one of the first festivals I went to, went up to a stall, had some wine, and I said, oh, I want to buy some. And they went, cool, here's an order form. I was like, oh, can I not?
Yeah.
Take it now. Yeah, I got my money.
Yeah.
And they said, no, fill in that paper order form. I'm like, cool, have you got a pen? And they're like, no, but, you know, you can post it back to us or whatever.
Right.
So I took the order form, had a couple more wines, you know. I had a couple more wines and then you go to them, oh, I'll get an order form from you too. But then, of course, you wake up the next day and you don't want two order forms. You did just want one of them. But, of course, I was like, well, which one was the one I actually wanted? So no one got any money. So driving home from the cellar doors, can't remember what I've tried and liked. Going to wine festivals, can't remember what it was. Even if I did remember and did go to a winery's website to buy it, the experiences were shit. A lot of the winery's websites, you'd click on buy our wines and we'll just download another bloody paper order form.
Yeah.
Fax it back to us. So anyway, this went on for a few years and I was kind of like, I don't hear too many stories about winemakers driving Ferraris and rolling in cash. So I was looking at it going, all right, well, I have a very real customer problem. I want to buy more wine that I like, but I can't remember what it was. So eventually I spoke to the farm guy, David, and said, hey, I need to speak to a winemaker. I need to understand how this industry works. He said, all right, I'll introduce you to Bruce Tyrrell.
Right.
I was like, cool, who's that? You know.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, he introduced me to Bruce.
They make good wine, by the way.
Oh, yeah. But he introduced me to Bruce. Bruce kind of gave me the half-hour version of the history of the wine industry. and said how they're all trying to, I'm being very diplomatic here, but, you know, saying how direct-to-consumer, every winery is trying to sell more direct-to-consumer, have a direct relationship with customers, keep more margin for themselves. They're all trying to do it. But direct-to-consumer is really hard, Rich. Mm-hmm. And I said, Bruce, I think you're finding it hard to sell because you're making it practically impossible for me to buy. And I think that's the piece that no one had, all the other platforms I'd seen were all focused on what the winery wanted. No one was focusing on what the consumer wanted. So all this stuff, kind of tech, redundancy,
banking
money, you know, it all kind of just molded together into going, let's do it.
You mentioned briefly that was certainly a lot harder than you anticipated. I mean, here's your presented opportunity. You can see the connection. You can see the customer experience from your Apple days. You can see the opportunity for making more money for the wineries. But you didn't see what it would look like making your own business.
So this is also 2013, 14. So all you ever hear about is Facebook, Mark Zuckerberg becoming multi squillionaires. You hear about all the success stories, but all those success stories account for 0.1% of what was attempted. You don't hear much about the non-success stories. But you kind of go into it with unrealistic expectations for a start. So there's that. But I've found it particularly hard raising the capital in Australia. I've said many times, you know, there's a reason why all the big tech startups come out of the US, because the US mindset around investing in high-risk businesses is very different to Australia.
Yep. They leverage volume in that game.
Well, they've got the volume, but also, though, I think they've got culturally, I think it's different. I've got a bit of a theory. Basically, I tend to think we are the sum of our life experiences. And when you're a kid in the US, very general statement, you go to school and you hear the stories of Westwood, the wagons, railroad tycoons, oil barons, where the billionaire oil tycoon was once upon a time digging the hole. The railroad guy was once upon a time swinging a pickaxe. They were getting shot at and ambushed and things falling on top of them. Basically, they were taking the ultimate risk with their life and it paid off big.
Right.
Even the immigrants going to America, did you know where you're going? Did you know anyone there? Nah. But it, you know, we took a huge risk and it turned out really well. So when you're an American kid, again, sweeping statement, you grow up with the sort of lesson that ultimate risk equals ultimate reward, and they're very cool with it. Now, when I think about the stories we hear in Australia growing up, we hear about, or at least I remember hearing about, grew wheat, got rich, bred sheep, got rich. Dug a hole, found a nugget, got rich. So, you know, we don't really hear stories about people taking the ultimate risk. Now, throw into that Sydney's property market, it's relatively low risk and a lot of people have done a ride out of it. If you speak to a lot of Australian investors and you go, hey, I've got this idea and it's risky, they're kind of like, well, why would I, you know, I don't need to take a risk to make money. I can just buy a house and make money. So, again, that's a very general statement, but the attitudes towards risk and risk and return are very different.
And the pools of cash available to invest in risk is limited compared to such a big market of wealthy.
Yeah, it's been really hard to start it in Australia.
Yeah.
That could just be, some people might say that's an excuse. I say it's a reason, or at least a contributing factor. I just think there's a reason why all the big tech startups have come out of the US, almost. You know, that's really been the hardest part, is capital constraints.
And thinking back to those early days of creating this platform or creating a selling solution for the winery and a buying solution for the customer, can you think about the first setback that really knocked you backwards and, oh, it's all for naught?
See, this is the thing, right? Basically, for me, there was no other option. It was forward or forward. I never, even though I wanted to 100 times, I never seriously contemplating quitting. So I think the setbacks, I don't refer to them as failures, because I look at life and the startup journey and all that. Like, your life is a book, and whenever something shitty happens, I'm just like, oh, well, that, you know, that's a shitty chapter.
Turn the page.
But the book's not finished yet.
So did you have a shitty chapter in the wine journey?
Oh, yeah.
But the discipline was to say it's just a shitty chapter and I'm turning the page.
Yeah, when you're in the moment, things can be pretty painful and stressful and scary. But that's something else as well. Is I used to watch a lot of Entourage, TV show, The Entourage. Yep. And, you know, Vince was always one of those characters where stuff just always seemed to work out. And Vince was always like, don't worry, it'll be fine. It'll work itself out. And in general, I think it does. But if your lens is on this period right here, you'd go, oh, failure. Mm-hmm. You know, that was a failure. It's like, yeah, but in the context of everything else, it's not. Like that snippet with no context is a failure, but that snippet in the broader context of everything.
It was an opportunity to take a different step.
Yeah.
Another step forward. What I talk about is I'm knocked down, but I'm going to take one more step and figure out what next. It sounds like you apply that principle in the way that you build a business.
Well, like I said, it was sort of like quitting's not an option, so just deal with it.
Figure it out.
Just work it out.
Do you surround yourself with a group of advisors? You mentioned the owner of the farm. Is he still actively involved in helping you
build
out the idea? And
Certainly surrounding yourself with good people that you can trust is huge.
And your banker colleague, he's still an investor on the journey with you?
Yep. Well, I've got a few more than them now, but I think there is an element of sort of being mindful of who you hang out with, who you spend your time with. Sort of, again, this is more like a life principle for me than just the business, but guard what you allow into your head. So if you hang out with people who are negative Nancys and always complaining about how the world, woe is me and all that, if you sit around all of that too much, you'll manifest it and be that person as well. Whereas if you hang out with people, you know, successful people, positive people, encouraging people, then you kind of take that on.
Interesting, you talk about your wine friend. He challenged your learned behavior that wine isn't something that's good for you. And he opened an opportunity for you to think differently.
Yeah, and well, the other thing too, like for me, I also had a bit of a, like I'm not religious at all, but I do sometimes, for lack of a better word, think that I'm spiritual. So I believe in something like the ether, the energy, the vibe, the universe. I don't know what it is. I don't believe in a God, but I do certainly believe in energy and stuff like that. So coming back from London and not being able to get the job I wanted, being made redundant, being single, you know, just sort of that was such a shitty time of my life. And all I wanted to do was find what it was I was meant to do. So then when I started interacting with wine and going on this journey, I was like, shit, this is what I've
been called to do.
It did feel like a bit of a calling. Mm. Sounds like a wank, but really felt like, I don't want to say it felt like fate, but it felt like I was being presented with something and it would be the worst thing I could possibly do to turn my back on it.
Yeah. The no fear, only regrets combined with, you mentioned the converging of what you saw was a real opportunity. I can help wineries understand the buying experience and help solve that problem to get them more access to market. You can help the consumer side of buying. That's a massive opportunity, but there was something that all of that called out in you, combined with your fear of never being laid off again, that started that journey, right? You had the courage to back yourself with the support of validation.
Well, you also too, though, I think it's a very real problem that I'm trying to solve too, but also it's a problem that I'm trying to solve for a group of people who deserve to have it solved, right? Yeah. Winemakers are, they're not in it for the money. They are the crazy ones who take on massive financial risk and personal
it's capital
ruin
intensive.
And all that.
It's everything. Subject to nature. It's subject to things that are in control and out of control. All of the things that...
But they are the salt of the earth people. There are very few wankers. Go to a bank and there are plenty of wankers. There's very little pretentiousness. I was like, you guys need help. Genuinely. I felt that they deserve to have someone really pull their balls on the line for them. Not try to milk them for a dollar, not try to scam them. There's a lot of that going on. Genuinely try to solve a problem for them.
Yeah, I'm lucky. I experienced that in a friend who has become a very good friend, Paul and Kath and Ben and the entire crew, Ryan. They're at Paracombe, and I experience exactly what you described. Just no bullshit. They tell a story. They're passionate. They bought a burned-out dairy farm. Mm. They created a brand from nothing. And now it's a family experience. And it's just such a genuine connection with people who are bringing their product to market. So what a win-win for you and for them.
Yeah, it just ticked a lot of boxes. And a benefit. There are wineries all over the world. You get to travel. When I drove around Australia after uni, I went through Margaret River. I didn't stop at the wineries. I went through Barossa. I just drove past these things called vineyards. I've got to sort of go back and go, oh, this is what it's all about, you know.
So, with a different lens.
With a different lens. So it's really hard, but there's also a lot to like about it as well.
So shifting the focus slightly, I want to talk about now you've got a business, mm-hmm. now you've got cash, now you've got the challenge of managing capital resources with the idea and the passion and the motivation. How do you manage the financial elements of your business to know that you've got the performance you need to take the product forward?
Well, you know, sometimes investment is available, sometimes it's not. Yeah, we've had to make some difficult decisions along the way as well. Sometimes we dial things up and sometimes we've got to dial things down. And unfortunately, talking about redundancies, I remember how painful it was being made redundant. And then the flip side is that I've had to make people redundant because at the end of the day, you got to watch the cash. And
Did your experience of being made redundant help those people that you made redundant? In the way that you were,
I don't know,
handled it?
I don't know. I mean, I did my best to empathise with them, what they were going through. I did say I've been here before and I know what it's like. So for what it's worth, you know, anything I can do to soften the blow a little bit, it's very painful to do that to people.
Yeah.
It's just, unfortunately, sometimes it's necessary.
Yeah, I think that concept of dialing up and down in the different moments or the different journey is a really important one for people. Dialing down is not because of failure. Dialing down is because you're looking at every business is resource constrained at some point and you have to make the right investment decision.
Well, there's a lot of dialing down, or, you know, a lot of people are doing worse than dialing down. Like, just now is a rough time for a lot of people.
Yep.
A lot of people. Sometimes you're running at a full sprint. Sometimes you've got to slow down to a brisk walk. But the main thing is that you keep moving. And this is one of the frustrating things about startup world, is that I started in a incubator, accelerator, incinerator. And you see all these things start up and there's lots of celebrations when they get the check. Then the money's gone after 6 months and they just quit.
Disappear.
And it's just like, well, you know, that was money well spent. There is a lot of waste in the startup world.
Yep.
And funnily enough, there was a guy I met. He's a VC guy, but he's not like any other VC I've ever met. He said to me, his first question was, how long have you been going? How long have you been at this? And I said, 8 years. He's like, okay, good. I don't look at anything that hasn't been going for seven. Mm-hmm. I was like, oh, why is that? And he said, well, if you haven't been at it for 7 years, you haven't gone through enough shit yet. So basically, he was like, if you've been at it for 8 years, that says to me that you're
committed.
That you're committed.
As an entrepreneur on a journey of executing on a vision to bring a product to market, there's enormous demands on you and your time. You've got a family. How do you put in place the balance and how do they get involved in the journey?
It helps when you meet her 1 month before you incorporate the business. This is what I was doing. So she doesn't know any different.
Right.
Or at least from me. So she's very much on the journey with me. And, you know, that can have its complications as well, especially if she comes from a family that doesn't have all this risk. Dad had a good job, safe job, whereas I'm kind of like, are you getting paid this month or this year? But no, if you don't have a supportive partner, you can't do it. So she's very understanding and she's incredibly patient, and I don't take her on as many holidays as I should. But to answer your question, a couple of things I try to do, not always successful at it. I try to make sure that I'm there when the kids go to bed. Try to do the romantic stuff here and there, like just buy a bunch of flowers on a Tuesday. Something I'm really conscious of, though, is like being around the kids. And if I've had a shitty day, like just trying to shield them from that.
Focus on them.
Yeah, but also trying to kind of like, trying to, if you're stressed out of your mind, not letting them absorb that.
Yep.
Again, the energy.
Wait a minute. You doing something that you're passionate about, you have shitty days?
Yeah.
I didn't think that was possible.
Yeah. No, there are plenty.
Yeah.
There are more good ones than shitty ones, obviously.
For sure.
But yeah, I think that's probably something that I do find a bit tricky. I mean, I remember Dad going through stuff when I was the same age as my kids. You know, he tried to shield me from it, but I was also hyper aware of what was going on
yep.
in his life, and I absorbed a lot of that. So now I'm trying to work out how to do the same thing but not have them absorb it.
Well, it sounds like you're onto the right things. Fascinating journey from, leaving school, not really knowing what to do, banking, but then making a commitment to yourself to never be in that position again. So well done.
Thank you.
I love the story.
Thank you.
Thank you for sharing the story. And if you had one tip for somebody out there that is in that moment, they've lost their job, they've got an idea, what would you say to them?
Fuck it. Just do it.
Very good. Well, thank you very much, Rich, for
your time. With some risk mitigation in there as well.
But it doesn't sound like risk mitigation really comes into your approach.
Oh, it does. Yeah, it does. Don't worry about that. It certainly does. But you got to try.
Yep.
If you don't try, you'll never know. So you got to try.
You're an example of what I love about small business owners. You've got the courage to back yourself. No, I think it's this is why I'm in telling these stories, is the courage to back yourself and give it a go. And then find a way to keep going. If people would like to look at your product.
So the With Wine app is on the app stores.
Yep.
Both app stores, Android and Apple. So just type in With Wine, one word.
Yep.
And you'll find us. The wineries can go to withwine.com and reach out to us or speak to one of your neighbours, because one of them will have my phone number and we'll get you on. So
fantastic.
withwine.com and the app stores.
Fantastic.
Awesome.
Thanks, Rich.
Thank you.
And thank you for listening. And please remember to leave a review and subscribe for new episodes and content.